All right, everybody. Welcome back, listeners. You are tuned in to another episode of South Sudan The World, where we delve deep into compelling stories and insights from fascinating individuals impacting South Sudan and the world. I am your host, Akol Doc, and today we have a special guest joining us. Our guest today, Sarah Chan. Sarah Chan is a manager of Africa Scouting for the NBA's Toronto Raptors. She's a former professional basketball player who attended Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and on a basketball scholarship. After college, she played professionally in Spain, Portugal, Algeria, and Mozambique. Currently, Sarah travels Africa recruiting talent for the Raptors. She's also the founder of the Home at Home, a Apedit Foundation, a foundation that advocates for women's rights and promotes education and sports. In 2022, she was the BBC 100 Women's List. She's an inspiration, she's a leader, and she's our guest today. Sarah, welcome to South Sudan and the World.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sarah, you've really been an inspiration, not just for Africans, but for young women in the field that you're in. Before we get into that, we want to know, who is Sarah Chan? Tell us briefly about you. And your upbringing.
Well, I'll start with thank you very much for having me today on your platform, and thank you for the opportunity to share. It's very humbling indeed to hear this introduction and the questions as well. So I grew up in Khartoum during the Civil War. Then later on, we moved to Kenya, where I began my basketball journey in Laser Hill Academy. Then went on to get a scholarship, which lightened the burden, I would think, for my family, as we came from a deprived background. So I was really excited to take the scholarship, and I played at Union for about 4 years, on and off, coming back home and being close to family. It was my first time to leave home. So it was a bit challenging, and the basketball culture in the U.S. is a whole different life in itself. So I had to get adjusted in different ways, but regardless, very grateful for the lessons, and it's been enjoyable. And until where I am right now, such a responsibility, and hopefully it continues to inspire the young generation and, you know, in chasing their dreams and aspirations.
Basketball has been the center of your life.
Yes.
You played basketball when you were younger, secondary school, you played it in college, mm-hmm. and you played professionally.
Yes.
When were you introduced to basketball? People always say it's a love. When did you fall in love with the game?
I'll say I fell in love when I was 17. But the twist to this is I was actually forced into playing basketball. The principal of my school, Laser Hill Academy, the late Mr. Were, basically saw a tall South Sudanese kid. I was the tallest in school, and I didn't want to get involved in any sport. And he asked me if I could join a sport, and I declined. I wanted to, you know, bask in the sun and mind my business and have downtime after classes. But he was adamant, and he actually basically the next day made it mandatory for everybody in school to take up sport. And I tried to run away from it. I tried swimming. I almost died. I knew it was not for me, man. I did other stuff like partake of lawn tennis. I knew it was not for me. I was really pathetic in football. So the very bench that I used to sit after classes was just right opposite a basketball court. And I remember just thinking, why not? Let me try it. I'm tall anyway, and I'll be closer to the rim. Everybody was shorter than me. So I started playing basketball, and my coach at the time, his name was Tom Apar, was from the Kenya Warriors team, Ulinzi, who is still participating right now in the league, the Kenyan Basketball League, was so tough. He was of military background. So he started teaching us, and for the 2 hours when I was on the court, I forgot about everything else. It became my safe haven. And so I continued to focus, and I started to grow, and I started to learn, and I then started to develop the passion for basketball from that time on. So it's not a Cinderella story. It's I was actually forced into it, and I started at 17 at Laser Hill Academy, and I've never looked back.
Okay. So like many stories of Africans who got introduced to the game, they're introduced to the game pretty late. Many Absolutely. People in the West played the game from the age of 5 or 6, and then they grow. You got introduced to the game when you were 17.
Right.
And then you got an opportunity to play in the United States. Let's right. talk about that. How was that like? How did that happen? How did you get recruited? And how was your experience like going to the U.S.?
Whew, wow. I started getting looks when I was 18. I was the first girl that ever dunked in high school game in Kenya. And scouts
on a 10-foot rim?
You know, I'll tell you what. You're a hater. But I actually could lip. You know I'm athletic. You know I almost dunked on you. You forgot?
No.
But yeah. So a coach called Basog from Cameroon, Javier Basog, Paul later on has become one of my really good friends and big brother in the game and somebody that I look up to, started scouting me. And he was scouting me for United States International University Africa here in Kenya to play for their team. So I remember going there for 2 semesters. And before I knew it, one of our guys from the basketball team had been recruited to the Union University men's team. And he told the coach was looking for a player, and he told the coach about me. And so Coach Campbell started calling me when I was 2 semesters into a USIU program for a scholarship in the US. And I remember just sitting at Junction with the family. It was, you know, evenings after Sunday service, and I received a call from this ridiculous number. I didn't know. And the voice on the other end said, "Hi, I am Campbell, like Campbell's soup." And I never let my coach forget him until today. I was like, "What is Campbell's soup? I'm used to combo and this other thing that don't about Campbell's soup." So he told me that he introduced himself and basically let me know that he was interested to recruit me for his team. And that's how I ended up. I was very hesitant in the beginning, but to be honest, with the background that we were coming from, dad is in school and between jobs, mom is in school, everybody is, you know, basically trying to make ends meet. Let me just say the load on the family for school fees was a bit much. And I thought to myself, you know what, if I do take up this scholarship, I can take off the load off of my dad's responsibilities. And so that's how I went. But it was very interesting because before I went, I remember dad sitting me down and he was like, "My daughter, you're beautiful just the way you are. And should anybody think any different, it's more their fault and them projecting than it says anything about you. Go and be our ambassador, represent us."
That's powerful.
Yeah, that was very monumental in my life. And honestly, it's been part of the reason that as a daughter from South Sudan, that it built my confidence. And so I fly out. I don't even know where I'm going, right? But I get there. Thank God I was 21 at the time, and I was ready to find out. And one thing about me, I'm never afraid to act. I never act like I know everything. And so I navigated and I made it to the U.S. And here I am in Jackson, Tennessee. Basketball culture is different. It is a predominantly Caucasian population. Even in school, the international students, especially from Africa, were a very small fraction of the population. So learning the game and also, you know, the different culture, everything being thrown at me at the same time. And then also with basketball, I remember in USIU, we had 3 practices and we actually missed practice sometimes. And now you're in a system where you're having 5 days of practice, and preseason, you sometimes had 2 workouts, or you had like targets that you had to beat for you to actually start practicing with the team. So all of this, and then sometimes you have 2 to 3 games a week. And so just trying to absorb all of that. And I went straight into my freshman year. I did not redshirt. So it was a whole lot to take in, but so grateful that I had the opportunity and the platform in a way to be able to learn and to be able to acquire new skills and life skills along the way. And it was a Christian school too. So it was incredible because it also kept me very level-headed and very grounded, as my, you know, background, my parents have been pastors and all of that. So it was a great mix and a great opportunity. So I was happy, but I was crying at the same time because it was tough, but I was navigating and, you know, here we are.
And how were you able to keep yourself motivated during these times? Because a lot of the times when people get opportunities like that and they're away from family, they're in a new culture, a new environment, it's easy to deviate from your objective 100%. And vision.
Right.
You're not, no family's there to check on you. You're alone. Right. And you're in a place like the United States. The United States is known for just freedom. Just do your own thing. How did you maintain yourself? How did you keep your eye on the prize?
I'll say this. I am very grateful for parents that gave us an incredible home education, because one of the things that mom always told us was, look, you need to learn how to work unsupervised. If you're going to do anything, then do it 100% with excellence, or don't do it at all. Don't waste your time and don't waste other people's time. I also remember, you know, the focal point of where I'm coming from, where dad sat me down and he said, "You are ambassador to our family and also ambassador to South Sudan, but Africa in general." So I always went into spaces knowing the heaviness of who I represent. So that in itself was enough. And I knew that where I came from, I needed to go back and impact, and I couldn't do it should I lose sight. And so I remained humble because I remembered where I'm from, where I am, and I was very focused on where I wanted to go. And that made it much easier to just, you know, be my own leader and not just following the footsteps or deviate from what the mission was. And also coming into Kenya in 98 with the family, knowing the background we all have from the Civil War, there was so many different assassination plots against my dad. We had been expelled from school because of our religious beliefs, discriminated against because of, you know, basically our race, and down to the point of gender. I knew that the cause was bigger than myself, and therefore it was a responsibility, and it was also a joy. And I was so grateful to be in that position. I remember coming into Kenya, and Dad always told us, we're here to study and we will equip ourselves because we have to go home one day and we have to impact our community and our people in Africa at large. So knowing that and being grounded since the age of 12, let me say, or as I can remember back to almost 10, when, you know, I knew how important like education was, not just to my parents, but started to see what it was doing in other people's lives, that I wanted it so bad. Other than basketball, I wanted to do so good, make myself proud, but also make my family and my nation proud. So that kept me grounded.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So your journey begins. You finish college in the U.S., and then you went professionally. What was your professional journey like? Did you decide that I want to play professionally, or was it just something that you just wanted to continue the game?
So after I got done with the union, I was actually invited to a WNBA tryout with Indiana Fever. Mm-hmm. And it was tough, you know, incredibly tough, as you can imagine. Everybody's trying to get a position. It didn't work out for me, but I got a contract out to be able to play in Europe. And I still counted it a blessing. And I always knew that I wanted to do something with the skills that I had. I didn't know where though. And since it didn't work out in the US, I went to Europe and played also on the continent. But I always knew that I wanted to further my basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also furthering your basketball, you further your education.
Yes.
You got a master's degree in peace and conflict studies at the United States International University in Nairobi. Yeah. How did you do that, both? Because many of the times you have athletes who believe that I have to be an athlete. Once I finish school, I got the education paid for. That's all I needed. But for you to be balancing playing professionally, doing all the different things you're doing in your life, and then finding time to go do the master's degree, it means education is important to you. How did you make the time for that? And why was that so important for you?
Education has been our saving grace as a family. And so on an individual level, I knew what it meant, not just for me, but especially for my father. Because of education, we were able to get an academic scholarship to take us to Kenya and in Nairobi instead of going to the Kakuma refugee camp. That is the only difference. So we were refugees that got lucky and got an opportunity to be able to integrate into, you know, society in Nairobi. And so we knew the gravity of that. First, my two older brothers, Aru and Shoal, the scholarship had not covered them. But I also remember my dad being adamant to not leave them behind, because at the time, young men in high school were being trained at the high school level for military gain, and they would be sent into war. We know how many people lost their lives, and death was basically so common, and we knew it at a very early age. And so knowing that education, and also being expelled from school, and knowing that somebody tried to deny your rights, when you're given the opportunity, you take it with all the seriousness that it deserves. Or at least I did. So coming to Kenya and as a family pursuing that, because that was the main goal. Dad said, enjoy everything else, but focus in school. That is the reason that we are here. And we're going to use this to go back home. So he also led by example. And so far, he has a PhD. We have two PhDs in the family. My mom is working on her PhD at the age of 64. Currently, we all are university graduates, and it is a blessing that we got to make it through It was not easy, but we kept trying. Learning languages to begin with, because coming to Kenya, we had to learn English and Swahili, learn to write and read, and then do school, right? So knowing that this is what brought us here, we were hungry to learn. We were hungry to ask. We were humble with the process to not lose our heads or our way, because we know we're here to study and we will go back home and we continue to impact community. I think that is, you know, solely the reasons as to why.
Wow, that's powerful. And I think there's something that many people, for some of our listeners who are not South Sudanese, have to look at the harsh background that many South Sudanese face from the 1980s to the 1990s. After the onset of the Second Sudanese Civil War, which started with the SPLA-SPLM Rebellion in 1983, a lot of South Sudanese who lived in Khartoum, who lived in places, faced immense persecution and injustice that forced a lot of people to flee. So when you see a lot of South Sudanese in Australia, in UK, in Europe, in Canada, and America, they're there. But also you have people in the East Africa diaspora. You have people in Uganda, in Kenya, Ethiopia, in Tanzania. A lot of people had to leave. So education is a key focal point, because there was a hope that one day we'll have our own country. And when we do get our own country, then we need to be equipped and prepared to run that country effectively. So many of us, when we were back home, this was instilled in us, the idea of South Sudan, the idea of being leaders, the idea of you're an ambassador, you're just not representing yourself, you're representing your country. So that is something very, very focal. And it's good that you highlight that, because many people forget that some of our best and brightest, they have that same similar philosophy. Our parents instilled in us, like, hey, we had a harsh life, but we're going to struggle to make sure that you have a better life. And like you said, you grew up in harsh beginnings, but now you have two PhDs. It's three, soon to be. Let me say four, because I think you'll...
I am challenged, and I'm definitely, definitely so looking into that.
That's good. And the respect and the social status that your parents have, your mother's currently a government official. That's a testament to that. Even them at their old age, the lessons that they instilled on you, they kept it going. Even your mother, when she's always like, you have to work unsupervised, she took her own lessons, because she's 64 doing her PhD, which means what's stopping you? Okay, you can't say it's too late. She's here. And she's currently the Minister of Agriculture in the state. So she's juggling things. So now I see a parallel, like how she juggles things, you juggle things too. You're like, we can do different things. We just have to chase excellence. So I think that's the most important thing. Now, in this phase of your life, you got into scouting. You were very involved with Giants of Africa. You've organized basketball camps. You've done various things. How did you end up with the Raptors?
So I had 2 weeks before my graduation, just downtime that I could have spent after stressful, you know, completion of thesis, running around to get everything turned in for graduation. And I remember just thinking, don't waste time, like donate your time to some sort of cause. And I started asking around for basketball camps. It happened to be a basketball camp taking place in Brookhouse in Nairobi, Kenya. And so I found out it was one of the guys from the basketball team, former player for USIU, who's like a big brother. His name is Abon Son. I was directing the camps. And so I called him. I was not part of the 12 coaches that had been selected, local coaches from Kenya, but I volunteered anyway. And I went to the camp. I geared up, and I was, you know, there in the hopes to learn but also teach. We had a lot of NBA coaches, scouts, and a president of the team that I didn't even know at the time, who was Masai Ujiri. And so I just went there, had a great time, impacted in the way that I knew how, and was receptive to learn and be corrected. And I remember having an opportunity to speak to the campers, and the speech as well also caught the attention of these different coaches. And I remember at the end of the camp, I got a phone call from a Masai Ujiri, and I was wondering who that was. When I looked into it, I found out he was actually the co-founder of Giants of Africa, and he wanted me to be a part of their team, as he felt my principles and my work ethic did align with their core values. So I started out from Giants of Africa as a development associate, but along the way, I think with how they saw my meticulous eye for details, I started scouting for the Raptors. And it goes without saying, with work and passion, everything led to the many managerial position that I'm in today. And that's simply how I got to the NBA, through volunteering. It's making use of your time and being productive.
I always tell my listeners that you never know
who's watching, who is listening.
Right. And excellence is a habit.
Right.
Because if you are somebody who's like, oh, I'm just going to do it when the time is right. No, you just have to feel every day you have to give your all, because you could be in scenarios where the person that you want to watch could be there and you don't know he's there, or somebody, his guy is there.
Right.
So this idea of doing things half, you know, half-assed, taking a step by step, it's unacceptable. Because if you were somebody who just kind of said, let me just, you know, wing it, people wouldn't have seen your abilities.
Right.
But you took this seriously. You're like, I'm volunteering. I'm going to give my all. I'm going to take this very serious.
Right.
And what did people do? They're like, hey, there's this person here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like a theme that I find in many successful people, especially that I've talked to. I had another guest of mine talked about how the first job he got was from volunteering.
Right.
Where he would volunteer. He was volunteering at this church and he used to be so good, he would translate. And then somebody's like, how? I need somebody to translate. You're doing a good job. I've been watching you for the past month. He's like, Akola, I didn't know I was being watched.
Right.
It's like, so just excellence should just be your lifestyle. I do things right. I do things well. And it goes to the point, you have to be able to work and supervise, you know? So Mama Mary says you have to work. What does that mean? That means you just have to know that I have to do things the right way all the time. I shouldn't do it because this person is looking at this person. They're impressed. No,
right.
I'm impressing myself. So if you get in that habit, so these are lessons that we can apply in our lives. You need to be able to like, hey, this small thing, I'm going to do it very well. That's just my lifestyle. Everything I do very well. And the habit, because people see that. That's when many of the times, like especially in business for me, I notice people like seeing people in environments that are not normal and seeing how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking to recruit somebody for a company, I'll go see how they work at a charity, at a fundraiser, volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how do they work when they don't have an interest. Because I can separate when they work for an interest or when they work because they're principled and believe in the work.
Right.
So I'm like, man, this person, they take their job seriously. They take their, that means they have principles. And those principles is just a lifestyle. Like I live a certain lifestyle. So these are some good themes that I'm getting from you. And I'm seeing a commonality with many people. So that's been really, really good. And so how has your experience been with the Raptors? How have you dealt with it? How have you adjusted? And I want you to talk about particularly the gender aspect.
Right.
Because you're in Africa.
Right.
You're a scout playing basketball.
Right.
And we have to admit it. We have a lot of misogyny in Africa. People are like, what's this girl doing here? You know,
right.
How do you deal with all that?
I think this goes back to also personality and personal convictions. From the get-go, when Coach Tom Apar had us on the court, you were not a boy, you were not a girl, you were genderless, you played, and you did everything that needed to be done. You didn't feel sorry for yourself, you kept working. From home, the work ethic instilled in us, the quality of treatment from our parents also was, you know, ingrained in me. But now going to the Raptors organization, which is such a privilege and an honor, honestly, to work with incredible, supportive big brothers in the game, you know, to be taken for just the skills and everything that you present has been quite an incredible privilege and honor to have. So when I go to work as a human being. And I don't look at gender. Not that we don't experience some of this uncomfortable situations, but if you know, and being South Sudanese, nothing has ever been comfortable for us coming from the longest African civil war. So just being so confident in what you do that it does not even matter who looks at you different, because it says more about them than it says about you. So the going into work with the confidence of, I know who I am, I love what I do, and I'll continue to do what I do, you know, despite it all, is one. But then also now down to personality and believing in my own abilities, and let me just say, starving the negativity around does help, because people look at you, and I have never been the kid that people looked at playing. I mean, before I played and thought, oh, because I had nobody to look up to when I was in this game. I didn't even know I would get to where I am today, but here we are. So I know in different spaces, different places, I will probably, like when I was playing, they didn't think that I would be a good player until I got on the court and I shut them up with my game. You represent yourself and you're in spaces, not just being a woman, but being a South Sudanese woman as well. You're not the first person that they're thinking that you are capable, right? But you stay humble and you let your work speak for you and you continue to represent yourself, your family, your nation, the continent, and just being a good human being and a capable full human being that can do their job, and you just leave it at that. That's how I carry myself. And also going to the extent of having to intentionally carry myself in different ways, because also the youth are watching, and it's my hope that I inspire them. Keeps me, you know, focused, keeps me accountable, and that's exactly what I do. So I know being in a male-dominated atmosphere could be push and tug here and there, but I go into it as a capable being that knows what they're doing, and I leave it at that.
The youth are watching. You can inspire them. I think that's, I just wrote that down. It reminds me where sometimes when you lose motivation for yourself, you have to stay motivated, because when you keep going, there's others you've inspired, or there's others that's like, wow, this is somebody that I can be like if I put in the effort, I put in the work. Yeah. And you said something very important. You said sometimes you got to shut them up with your game.
Yeah.
Actions speak louder than words.
Right.
Prove it. Do it. Don't listen to what they have to say or what they think. Just do it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they have to say.
Right.
And so now, what are some of the things that you have been doing for the Toronto Raptors in recruiting, trying to find talent? I saw in an article, you said something very interesting. You said there's a lot of Pascal Siakams out there that just need to be discovered.
Yep.
What are you doing to really identify great talent in Africa and give them opportunities to compete at the best?
Well, I'll say this. First of all, Africa is blessed. We have an infinite pool of talent, vibrant youth. Like Masai always says, Africa is a gold mine, right? We're always present. The Raptors has the most scouts on the continent of Africa in different locations, and having eyes out, having networks with coaches, being at camps, being at the Basketball African League, and this year we'll be in four countries. Being present at this event and intentionally staying connected, which is now down, we have to have people skills. We have to learn how to work with people for you to also get information, right? And so we have our eyes on all of the events, including the camps that take place, like Basketball Without Border, or down to like, if Coach Wall has a training session where he has brought his top talent together, Coach Wall from Uganda, for instance, Kaman's coach. So definitely making the connections and being present at the events has been one of the greatest, I think, competitive advantage that we've had on the continent. And having all of these different scouts in different regions of Africa has been very helpful to access those regions, because, you know, there's the interstate visa restrictions here and there. And sometimes you might not, for instance, me with my South Sudanese passport, might not be able to get a visa right on time for me to be a Western part of Africa, but we have our guys there that we can delegate the work to. So it becomes easier, but I think I'll just give props to the Raptors and the great leadership from Masai Ujiri to basically invest fully in Africa and have scouting eyes in different parts of the continent.
Okay. And I think we're starting to see a surge of talent coming from Africa. And what now I've been seeing with, you have the Ball League, you have all these different leagues that are coming up in Africa. You see what the NBA Africa is doing. You're seeing that Africa is going to dominate the sport.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you find some of the great players in the NBA now. They are, and they're talented, and you're seeing more capacity building being targeted towards young people. You have younger people who have been playing since 10 now. So you've seen these camps where they're targeting young people. So after 5-6 years, they're ready to go play professionally. And some of them get scholarships, and a lot of them. And some of the things people don't realize about the sport is that it's not just going professionally. It's the opportunities you have. So if you have somebody who comes from a village in Africa and they come from a family who is impoverished, and they are good at the game, and they get a full scholarship to go to a good American university.
Right.
That can change their life. 100%. That you change the chain. If they don't go to the NBA, they can play in Europe. They can play in Greece. They can play in different places.
China. I know
people play in France, China, Italy, so many other places. It's crazy. The sport is growing. And so, like, what do you think Africa needs to do to position itself as the sport grows?
I think governments and the private sector needs to continue to invest. We need to take the examples of Rwanda and what they've done with the arena and just the ecosystem and how it's growing and how it's nurturing not just the game, but like how it's also like uniting and promoting amongst our people, but also bringing in everybody. I think we need more, and I think one of the major things that lack on the continent is access to facilities. We need to have more facilities. Giants of Africa has been, through the Built Within initiative that was launched in 2021, has committed to building 100 courts. And at the moment, we are at 29 courts of 100 on the continent. and we have been to villages, to slums across Kenyan, just basically strategically placing facilities, basketball courts in these areas that gives, you know, accessibility, but also encourages participation, right? So we need to invest in that. And we need to, I think mindset has to also change. We have to start looking at sports from a business perspective. For the longest it has been, it's been looked at as a leisure thing that you do. Girls are not encouraged to play. You stay home and do your chores. Yeah, you can do your chores, but you can still participate and make something of yourself, right? Growing together, not leaving any counterparts behind is the other thing. And also now that we have Basketball African League on the continent, different leagues running parallelly, we're able, and it's exciting for scouts because we're able to collect data on players from a younger age now. As times are gone when we had to start at 17. Now we can actually start younger and you can start to build and collect data on, you know, athletes from a younger age. And that gives them, you know, exposure. It gives them, it places them better for them to be seen. So I think we need to invest more into sports on the continent of Africa. We need to take it more serious.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that many people have failed to look at is mm-hmm. the role sports can play in promoting the culture and promoting also unity. And I like the point you said, you need governments and you need private sector. A lot of people don't understand the role that these two can play. And it's not just the potential of people going professional, but there's so many things that this thing can do.
Right.
And sports is a unifying factor. Right. And so I think the most important thing is ensuring that people understand the value of the sport. And many people see sport as, okay, this is just something for fun. But no, it's more than that. It's more than that.
Even just the health benefits of sports, right?
Yeah, just being healthy, eating, taking care of yourself, and even getting people to run and be active. I mean, sports is a big thing.
For instance, what's happening at Dr. BR, I think is such an incredible, the Dr. BR complex. Uh-huh. I think it's such like incredible and visionary investment to not only use it as business, but also the benefits of that to our community. It rehabilitates people. Right. It gives the youth something to do instead of being involved in like social issues. So.
Yeah. And it's like, and not only just that, it's just like to add on to that, it's people are going there. You have people in their old age are coming there. I've run now. I lift weights. Why? The doctor told me I just need to exercise. So you have people in their 40s, 50s and 60s who have never worked out.
Right.
And go there. Like the other day I was there, I was running. I saw some guy with his kids and they're running together. So I was like, wow, he's older guy. He's bringing his kids. So, and then asked them, you know, then I have a friend of mine who goes to the gym. So he's like, yeah, he told me the only place I can take my kids in Juba is Dr. Biat. I like it. I just let them go play basketball. They play football. I go and lift weights. I come out, I see them, and it's just, we play together. So I think that's something we need to look at. Like sports is a unifying and it's a good thing. There's the health benefits. There's the social benefits. Right. And it's something that can bring people together and it's healing.
Yeah, it's really helped me along my journey too with trauma and everything else that I have had to like overcome.
Mm-hmm.
When I couldn't speak basketball, let me release.
Yes. And you just forget everything else. You're just like, I'm going to do this thing. And that's the beauty of the sports is the competitiveness. It teaches you character. And that's something.
Right.
My father used to tell me something. In high school, I used to play sports, played football, American football, mm-hmm. basketball. I ran track. And then the summer I was playing tournament. I was so busy and I was always, and I was telling my dad, like, why? He's like, it teaches you character. It's like, you have to practice every single day or three times a week. You have to stay in shape. You have a game and you're held accountable because in sports, there's no if, and, or buts. It's you're performing or you're not. You're not playing, you get benched.
Right.
And so I used to be so tough. And then one time I was, you're forced, and they tell you the truth, like, Sara, you're not performing. I'll call, hey, you're not playing good defense.
And also in school, if you're not performing in class as well, you won't play sports.
You won't play. And when you play a sport in the U.S., your coach has access to your grades.
Oh, yes, I know.
So he's always like, yeah, you know, I remember one time in high school, we had a very good player, but I think he was failing Spanish. And then the coach called him out. I was like, by the way, you're failing Spanish. Front of everybody. He said, what do you mean? It's like, well, you're not just failing Spanish, you're failing us as a team.
Right.
I was like, wow, that's so deep. Right. He's like, when you guys don't care, take care of it in the classroom, you're affecting us as a team. Right. So those character things that people really, they don't see it in that the value. I think also I want you to share about just your organization, and you have the Apartheid Foundation, and you provide mentoring to girls, you do awareness on preventing child marriage, and you promote education and sports. And I think that's in line with with everything you've discussed today. That's why I wanted to kind of close with this. How does everything you've done come together with your foundation?
I'll say this. I think life wouldn't have any meaning if we cannot use the skills and everything we've acquired through our experiences and exposure to be able to impact. And remember, along the way I told you, they told us we need to come for education. We're here for education. We will go back home and we need to impact and help those that were left behind too, right? So I've always had at the back of my mind, you know, since I was a kid, at the age of 10, I was babysitting other kids. And because of war and being exposed to so much, at a young age, you always knew that you might not be able to have the pleasure of meeting somebody again, because maybe they just disappear or something happens because death was common, right? So with that, knowing what home was to us and community was to us at home, Mama's home, even now in Juba, hardly do you find the door locked. The compound door is almost always open. And that's always been like that. I watched her and how she let everybody in. And she was so compassionate and loving. And if there was an onion or two and a neighbor was in need, they would get it. When we didn't
just
have...
Just welcoming.
Yeah, so warm and welcoming. And the values that they've instilled in us from home is actually why it's a Padiet Foundation and why it is Home at Home. A representation of my mom's home and the impact she's had in our life. Mom's home in South Sudan in Africa and in the world, you know, to share the same values of, hey, education. Hey, togetherness. Take joy in every little thing that you do. Work hard. Do things with excellence. And the principles and just the religious teachings that they have imparted on us. Through this foundation, education and empowerment and knowing what it's done for us is just simply, if I can put it, the reason that I put it together to not just honor my mom and family, but also to share the same values and hope to inspire other people to do the same. Their dreams, because we are all very worthy and deserving of our dreams and aspiration, and they're possible and they're within our reach, and sometimes it just needs for someone to spark that. So that's my why for the foundation.
That's very, very powerful. So, and I like how everything you've learned, the values you've learned, you've put it together. So we're going to close with this. We'd like to ask our guests, how is your work making South Sudan better? And what is a word of inspiration you have for young people? What does the future look like in your eyes? And how are you making South Sudan a better place?
Humbly, I would say through my foundation. And I was actually just in Rome 3 months ago. And we all know what is happening in the Jorda border and with the conflict in Sudan and the influx of refugees into Rang and the overwhelming situation on the ground. Just bringing awareness and, you know, advocating for the funding. I was part of the UNHCR donors meeting for them not to stop the funding. The funding was, I think, between 35 to 39 by the end of last year. And there were concerns that it might end because, as you know, we're living in historically unprecedented times. There's the Gaza situation that is active.
Yes.
There is Afghanistan that people are tending to kind of almost forget, but is still in need of, you know, the resources as well. And so there's concerns of donors and in my way and trying to use my voice to advocate and make sure that this keeps flowing because we all need each other. No man is an island. So I would think that in my way, that's how I'm helping, but also through my foundation, continuing to advocate for the girls' education, but just education in general. And when it comes to sports, you know what is going on with home. I mean, first time into Olympics, World Cup was incredible, but also, you know, girls like, what's her name? Ayom Atieng. She was actually part of the Apajit Foundation when she was going through her high school and university, and she was our first pioneer girl that graduated from Riari University, and she still hopes to continue with her education, but is currently at Dr. BR helping and coaching the younger generation. And she also started her own mentorship and basketball programs in Kakuma refugee camp, where her family still stays. Her mom is there, but she's in South Sudan now and better place working and also contributing in her own way. So I see it in the cycle of things and the ripple effects of what we do, but what I'm doing in my little minute way to contribute. South Sudan is extremely blessed with talent. And so we'll continue to continue to search within South Sudan for talents, and deservedly so, report and build data and continue to forward. I was actually in Melbourne this holidays. I just came back 2 weeks ago, and I went to see the Longhorn program, which is also South Sudanese program, that has in, you know, the likes of Captain Kwanyi Kwanyi with South Sudan national team came from, the likes of Mayan Dengadel, and all these incredible guys that have also contributed, Emmanuel Malo, to the national team and its success now, came from, and also still looking at talent. It's not even in my jurisdiction, by the way, but it's part of my passion and my contribution to South Sudan as well, to continue looking and also report on it, because basketball is a lifestyle. Now, for my parting words to the younger generation, or just anybody that is a dreamer, like we were coming into Kenya and just looking for greener pastures, is keep going. Keep perfecting your craft, keep believing, put God first, and it will happen. It is a slow process, but it is worth it. It might get tough, never give up. Such is life. We are born out of the civil war, and look at us now. And we're not even where we want to be yet, and we will get there. On an individual level, do not tire. Keep your head up, keep doing the right thing, whether anybody's watching you or not. For the young guys and girls, I will tell you, and I insist, keep the right company around you. Whether anybody is watching or not, do yourself a favor and sacrifice and put in the work that your future self will thank you for. And just take it a day at a time, 24 hours. Don't worry about the rest of the week. The next 24 hours, how can I be my best self? How can I improve? How can I impact not myself, but those around me? And how can I bring glory to God? And just keep going. When you're tired, rest. Don't give up. Keep going. It is all worth it at the end. Don't do it for money. Start from passion. Everything else will follow. And believe in yourself even when people don't believe in you. It is all possible. It's still in your reach. Your dreams are very valid, and you're worthy and deserving of your aspiration. So keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on. Ladies and gentlemen, trust the process. Be patient. Go at it every single day and be consistent. And keep on keeping on. Thank you for joining us on South Sudan the World. That was Sara Chan. Sara, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the platform to share. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, we're off. I love you guys. Take care of yourselves and be great.